Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. I'm your host, Christina Frazier. Tonight, forum member Craig Bolland hosts a conversation with KU Environmental Studies students Megan Rush, Peyton Templeton, and Sasha Bornstein. Students will explain why they have a passion for protecting the environment and what they've learned to help address the world's looming environmental crisis. This show was recorded on April 7th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church here in Kansas City, Missouri. Our show begins with forum member Craig Bolland interviewing KU Environmental Studies students, followed by a short break, and then concludes with the question and answer part of the program. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's join the conversation here at 90.1 FM, KKFI.
Good morning. Welcome to the forum. My name is Craig Bolland. I'm a member of the forum committee. The forum exists to afford a platform for the discussion of significant issues, especially those which involve ethical values in the contemporary world. And we are going to have a discussion of ethical values here for sure. Okay, well, this morning we've got a really interesting program. We have three students from the KU Environmental Studies program, and as I mention your name, would you kind of just signal who you are so they know? We have Peyton Templeton, Sasha Bornstein, or Bornstein, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And Megan Rush. Okay. Now, this will be a little bit unusual program. I'm going to interview them and ask them some questions and ask each to answer in order. So I'm now going to shift into interview mode. Why did each of you decide to enter the KU Environment Program? And let's start with Megan here.
So the environmental program was actually not my first choice. I was living out in Colorado, and I got a degree in animal science. And I worked in that for about 13, 15 years, somewhere in there, out in Colorado. Life ended up taking me to Kansas. And so from living in Colorado, I really understood the depletion of natural resources, what was happening to nature, being out in national parks, things like that. And I always wanted some kind of a degree in natural resource, but living out in Colorado and working full-time, going to school full-time, and paying bills was not going to happen. So once life took me out to Kansas, I decided to try and go back for another degree. I was originally in biology, and I think it was one of my advisors approached me and said, have you ever thought about environmental science? And so I ended up getting a degree in that, and now I am actually doing a master's in environmental assessment, and I defend in May, so I will eventually be in that. And everyone thought it was kind of funny, animal science to environmental science, but it's actually all very connected, and I do still use my degree in animal science to work with nature.
Great. Thank you. Sasha?
For me, can you all hear me? All right. For me, when I was 19, my dad took me to a camp in Oregon where I spent a week there and I loved it, and I really got this awesome connection to nature, and I learned how awesome it was for other young children to experience it. So I went back there and I became an intern, and then I was an instructor there 2 summers ago, and I just started to love nature, and I got this desire to just want to preserve it for everybody else, really, and I learned that there's all these cool ways to connect with it. So that's what kickstarted it for me. And I started off as an athletic training major in college, and then I switched. So I'm a bit behind, but that's what it is for me.
Great. Peyton?
Testing. I grew up camping. I grew up in nature outside. I loved everything about nature. And growing up, I really started to realize, like, what was happening and what we were taking away from it. And I realized the importance of preserving nature and what we can do to make this planet better for everyone, and most importantly, better for our future generations.
Great, thank you very much. Our next question is, what environmental problem interests you the most, and what can be done about it? Megan?
So for me, it's been really hard to pick one focus area because everything in nature is so connected. I am currently working in water quality, I work for Kansas Alliance for Wetland and Streams, and we help with private landowners that have small cattle operations or crop fields, things like that, to implement practices that better benefit water quality on their land, and we give them kind of an incentive to work with us. But because everything is so connected, it was really hard for me to pick one area. So I also work with the conservation district in each county on soil health, because that's very much connected with water. And I also am interning with Clean Air now, same with these guys, for air quality also, because it is all very connected. And what can be done about water quality? I think education is going to be the huge thing for any environmental issue. A lot of my time is spent in workshops, teaching private landowners that have been practicing the same way, you know, since the 50s or, you know, even before that, is really teaching them and the new generation how to, you can still practice the way that you want to. We can still grow food, we can still raise animals, but there is a more environmentally friendly way to do that. So I think for my position right now, it really starts through education.
Right, Sasha.
The number one for me would be land conservation and tree conservation and like forest conservation. So I want to like work as a park ranger or something like that eventually, just to work on conserving what our national parks are. And a big issue for me is the whole industry using palm oil in lots of foods and things like that. So that would just be resolved by like not cutting down trees and bringing people out to these parks and helping them to understand the importance. And then also you can use trees for cooling down buildings, and then also cleaning the air with carbon sequestration and the mycorrhizal layer with mushrooms and fungi and things like that.
Peyton?
I agree with Megan. I think everything is all very connected. It's hard to pinpoint one problem that's more of a problem than the others. Right now I have more knowledge on air quality through our internship, but I think a very big problem is trash. How we're getting rid of our trash, how we're consuming trash. And I think the best thing for that is just to make conscious decisions to use a reusable water bottle, use glass instead of plastic, you know, buy things that are more environmentally friendly than others.
Okay, you've each explained what your main interest is and what you think can be done. So what stands in the way, and let's limit that to the United States. What is it that's preventing a consistent, all-out, you might say, or even a little more than nothing in the United States to address and solve some of these problems, Megan?
So I'm trying not to be the doom and gloom of the group up here, but
that's okay. They like that.
I think first and foremost, education, lack of education stands in the way. I think we push a lot of agendas, but there's no follow through behind it. For example, working in water quality right now, I can push these practices on ag people all day long, but if they have no idea why they're doing it, they're not going to continue doing it, and they're not going to teach the next generation to do it. So I think that is a really big issue. I don't want to get too political on you guys, but I think policy is a huge issue. We're not going to see any real changes unless we start pushing for policy changes. So it starts at a different level, which also comes with education. There's a lot of bills out on the floor right now, for example, a higher tax on hybrid cars. Isn't that exactly what we're trying? You know, we're encouraging people to have more clean energy and a better way to commute, but we are taxing them because they're not paying the taxes for gas. So it starts with education, knowing what's out there and understanding it and being able to vote correctly. So education and policy.
Is that bill about the extra registration fee for hybrids and electric cars, is that passed in the Kansas legislature?
It did. It passed. Yep.
Okay, Sasha.
I agree with Meg. I definitely think it's kind of strange how they pass these policies that just like limit us to do certain things that are helpful. I think what stands in the way for as far as parks and trees go is like people are really consumed with daily lives and the way society is geared just towards like working and commuting and driving and things like that. So there's just not time, and everything's fast-paced. There's no time to think about these kinds of things. So we just need people to kind of open their minds a little bit more, in my opinion.
Peyton?
I also agree with the lack of education thing. That is 100% a problem that's standing in the way between us and a more environmentally friendly world. I think just being aware of what you're doing and going the extra mile to learn about things like policies and what's going on and what you can do, because you do make a difference. We all do. And if we can all stand together and really enforce, like, just social awareness of the environment, like, that can make such a big difference.
Okay, Art, according to television that I see, most of the young people in America are playing computer games. They've even got Olympics for computer games now. When I was out in L.A., they were my son's in photography, and so they had him over there taking pictures of all these kids playing computer games, and there's huge audiences for it and this kind of thing. That's, I'm sure, prejudicial, but are today's college-age people sufficiently concerned about our environment and doing anything about it? And if not, why?
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to try not to be doom and gloom again here. I think with our generation, we are more aware of the issues that are happening. Are we doing enough? No, absolutely not. I don't think, saying that I have a reusable water bottle, so therefore I'm taking care of a problem. Like, I just don't really see it as being enough. The out of sight, out of mind is a really big one. There's a lot of things that are still happening that we're all still supporting that is contributing to these issues, such as, why is there still plastic bags in grocery stores? I lived in Boulder, Colorado for a little bit, and the city said no more. You cannot have plastic bags there. I think it just takes a... I saw some hands up in the bag. I think it just takes a little bit more of a push. And as long as generations are just sitting by and saying, well, I think I'm doing enough, and maybe that is enough, it's not enough right now. We need to do more. We need to do better. And again, starts with education and policy. I understand what bills are out there, what you can vote on, and what you can change.
Okay. Sasha.
I think there's a mix, but I don't think the ratio is high enough. There's, like, not enough people doing environmentally, like, just things or sound things, I would say. Like, for example, I live with two roommates, and they both work in a grocery store, and they use lots of plastic bags and things like that, and I've been trying to encourage them to be more environmentally conscious, and they just, like, kind of shrug it off and don't really say anything, and they referred to me as, like, an environmental freak one time, and I was like, that was really weird, because what's wrong with that?
That's a compliment, actually.
What's what?
That's a compliment if you're an environmental freak.
Okay, yeah, I kind of thought it was, but I didn't really know how to take it in the moment. When I worked in Oregon, they sold paper bags, for example, for like 89 cents at this one grocery store. And I think that's all I really have right now for that.
Peyton?
I agree with Meg in saying that the younger generation is becoming more aware of what's going on. I also agree that not enough people are doing enough for it. You've got some people who think about these things every second of every day, and they're making a difference, but compared to all the people who are not really caring at all, it's kind of selfish, honestly, and it's kind of sad to watch. But I think that goes along with education and informing people and what's going on and motivating them to make those changes and make a difference, really.
I'm going to throw in a related question here. You've each expressed some disappointment in society's reaction to the environmental crisis. What keeps you going? What keeps you deciding, well, I'm still going to go after it?
I think for me, the answer is pretty simple, is that it's just, in my own mind, it's the right thing to do. I don't do it to get credit or recognition for it, I guess. I just feel like it is the right thing to do. And that's how I want to live my life. because at the end of the day, I have to go to bed with myself. So I would feel better knowing that I'm doing those things and that I am fighting for something that I believe in.
I have worked with organizations that really focus on how nature is a teacher for yourself and for other people as well. So when I went and got involved in nature and connected to it, I learned a lot about myself. So a part of me wants to give back to the whole world because it can't also defend itself completely. Like, of course, there's the biological cycles that maintain ecosystems and homeostasis and things like that. So I just want to give back, and I really just care about it. And there's a little bit of hope in me that, you know, enough people will eventually realize this is the way to go.
Great. Peyton?
I feel like the connectedness that I have with nature is sort of like a friendship, and that friend is telling me it's the right thing to do. You know that feeling in your gut when you know what you're doing is the right thing? That's what keeps you going forward, I think.
Okay, this is a highly philosophical question, and one that I think about a lot over the years. Do you see humans as superior to other life forms, or are we just part of nature? Or in between?
Yeah. This is probably one of my favorite questions that's been asked, and the hardest one to answer to, because so many people come at it from different points of view. So I think humans have worked very hard to separate themselves from nature, and this is the very downfall. This is where, in my opinion, completely my opinion, I think that we've gone wrong. Of course, humans have capabilities that some other species and life forms don't have, but we also depend on those very things that we are killing in order to live every day. So I see us very much a part of nature. We cannot live without nature. And so by separating ourselves from it, we are in the situation that we are in. Our technology has outgrown what it should, and that is how we try to control the issues that we have now, is through technology. And really, I mean, we're failing, you know. So it, specifically in my line of work with soil, we are growing all this food, and so everyone sees like, oh man, we must be doing a really great job, we have all this food. But our soil is sterile. So the food that we are growing is completely lacking of nutrients. And so we feel like we're doing the right thing, we've separated ourselves, we can control these situations, but really we're not doing ourselves any favors. So we are a part of nature. We need to learn to live with nature and not control it and be a puppet master. We depend on it, and we need to take care of it.
Sasha.
Yeah, for me, we definitely have some superior like qualities of our brains that give us abilities to control nature, but as you know, human beings, we're all still one part of nature, because we need to focus on keeping everything sustainable. So it kind of makes me think of, like, an analogy for this is the movie WALL-E, when they have the people who are really overweight and sitting in those, like, floating chairs. That's how they get around, because they can't walk anymore. And they drink these milkshakes with all their nutrients in them. It's just crazy to me. And I forgot the rest of what I was going to say.
Well, you have a chance. I'm going to ask another question and give you a chance to say it. Peyton?
I think we're definitely all the same. If you think about it, we're tiny little specks on a tiny blue planet in a massively huge universe. So in the grand scheme of things, we are all the same. I agree that humans have those parts of the brain that make them think they may be superior to others, because we have communication, we have technology, we have all of these things that kind of make us seem better, but we aren't. I think we're all great. I think everything on the planet is great. We're all the same.
Well, this question is actually becoming more and more relevant in just the last decade. A couple of you mentioned the health of soils. Is that we now know that nutrition and the use of nutrients for plants is totally dependent on all the life in soils, which is essentially saying we're dependent on bacteria or funguses, fungi. Also, in the last 10 years, we've learned that our microbiome in our body is very much connected to our health. And these are just bugs. You know, I grew up thinking that's a bacteria, kill it. You know, and every time you had a bacteria, you took a pill for an antibiotic. Now we're learning that when you take too many antibiotics, it messes up your system, makes you less healthy. So would you agree then that we are now understanding our interdependence on the essentially the simplest forms of life? Megan?
That's a hard one to answer because I think we are more aware of it, but only in specific groups and realms. You know, it's not as wide known as it should be. Again, people aren't aware of some of these issues, and they're still living off of, you know, amoxicillin every month to cure that. You know, I don't know. So I think there's more of an awareness. I think it could be wider known.
Definitely agree it could be wider known. And to go back with what Craig was saying about the gut or the bacteria, there's bacteria in your gut that are very helpful too. And then when you take the pills and everything, it can cause, you know, MRSA, antibiotic resistant strains of diseases. And I think we need to take more of a perspective and look at kind of how Native Americans took care of the earth a lot and grew everything because they grew it all in a sustainable way for the whole ecosystem. So.
Great, Peyton.
I agree that it should be more widely known. I think humans have this dependence on taking a pill and getting rid of all of their problems, and it's much deeper than that. That is one of the reasons that I love nature so much, is you can go outside and feel this sense of freeness and, you know, be with one. And I think that that is something that is becoming more widely known. I think people are getting better at healing themselves in more natural ways, but definitely not where we should be, I don't think.
Well, thank you very much. This is just the first stage. We now go into question and answers, and we give our audience a chance to ask questions. And when they do, just chime in, whoever thinks of an answer first, and then everybody else will get a chance. Would the ushers please take up the collection in support of the church? And let's see if I've forgotten anything else. Okay, when you ask your questions, we don't like speeches, so we'd make it a question, and everybody ask just one question until everybody has a chance. You will get a chance to make speeches in the library afterwards when we go for further discussion. So I'm going to bring the microphone to Jeff.
You've covered a wide range of areas, and I wondered if you could talk a little bit about air pollution and what is causing air pollution in your areas, and are we making any progress at all toward ameliorating this, or is it going in the opposite direction?
I don't know about the level of progress being made, but I'm sure we could, you know, research and figure that out. Can you say the first part of your question again?
Causes for air pollution within the geographic area that you all have been working in.
The causes in Lawrence, Kansas, where we're based out of, there's lots of KU buses that drive around, and when they stop at the bus stops, they idle them. They're not allowed to turn them off, apparently, according to First Transit, the company. There are the food delivery trucks when they drive through the alleys on Mass Street or like Vermont Street or New Hampshire right next to that. You know, there's also just all the cars in general and the Uber and Lyft, for example. I think any others you can think of for causes of air pollution? The rail yard in Lawrence, yep, that's a big one. And there's also some warehouses in Gardner that we are aware of, and we've been air monitoring those.
I think from, we were having a talk before this started, that since the 70s, since we've become aware of the issue, it is significantly better. They have made changes, regulations, policies. But it's not great still. There's still, you know, elderly and young going into hospitals for asthma, air pollution causing mortality, and it's it could be a lot stricter, I guess is what I'm trying to say. We've made strides and bounds in air pollution, definitely, but we can do a lot better.
Long time ago, Sherwood Rowland talked about ozone depletion. And why do you suppose that that topic has disappeared from the topics in front of us as far as air pollution and water quality and soil quality and like?
That is a really good question. Personally, for me, I feel like the problems are now way more severe and more localized, and they're happening in our cities, in front of our faces. And those are the issues that we really, really need to be focusing on right now. I don't think that takes away from the issue of ozone depletion, but I think things are a lot more extreme than they used to be.
I think we should still focus pretty heavily on ozone depletion, though, because of levels of greenhouse gases that could get trapped in that layer for sure.
Thanks. This is very interesting. I got here a little late, so I might have missed something that you said earlier. You're from Lawrence, Kansas, are you?
Yes.
Okay. So I wonder if you could talk about, or if you're aware, when you're thinking about the whole experience of dealing with environmental issues, kind of the level of support or kind of community activity that you have from city to city, state to state, region to region. I mean, I've lived in many parts of the country, and I know it's a lot different in other places. And so maybe you're in a unique location, Lawrence, that where these issues really are forefront. But so I'm just wondering, maybe you've already kind of talked about this. So that's kind of a big concern. What do we do in this part of the country where kind of the general thrust of the environmental movement is so much more challenged than it is in Massachusetts, for instance, or Colorado, or other states. So how do we deal with that? So that's maybe a lot of questions, but anyway, that's kind of...
I think on a small scale, it's going to be smart consumers. Vote with your dollars. Make yourself aware of what the issues are locally. Join groups that are fighting against that, nonprofit, grassroots type places. But vote with your dollar. You know, it one person doing the best that you can, I feel, does make a difference. So being a smart consumer.
And there's also a bunch of little things you can do as well, as far as the way you manage your home, turning off all your lights, or not using them, unplugging your electronics, because that still will consume energy. It's just providing that electricity, even though you're not having it on. You know, opening your windows instead of using AC, for example, using blankets instead of heaters. Definitely turning off your cars when you're like sitting somewhere, and not idling is a huge one. I see a lot of that, and I just don't understand why people idle when they're just sitting there.
And using environmentally friendly cleaning products.
So what you're really talking about is starting at the most fundamental level, is that we begin to reprogram how we live and work that out. That's what you're saying, maybe?
Yeah, and then once you get enough people to start doing that, it's going to have a whole broader change.
I think the issues are so large, right? If you look at them as a whole, sometimes if you look at them too much, you think, well, I can't. They're so big, you know? How do you approach it? So starting with yourself, your family, your community, helps you get a sense of change, and then spreading it out from there.
So thank you. I'll just say, so I worked for the Land Institute for many years, so I'm with you.
And there's also a big movement of river cleanups going on now, and this thing called like trash tag on the internet, where people go around and collect tons of trash, and they post their like result pictures of it, which is a pretty cool movement. So I definitely want to encourage people to do that or spread the word about it.
Soil quality or lack thereof was mentioned, and as well as fungus and mushrooms. Would you please elaborate on not only the missing elements, but what our approach might be in terms of policy?
So In my line of work, what we are doing is trying to educate landowners who are growing crops that, you know, having these row crops and tilling for so many years and compaction of the soil is actually not healthy, and it's killing our soils. So we are working with them on what's called cover crops, a diversity of cover crops. And it's a mixture of different seeds and plants that you put in usually after your cash crop, a soybean or corn. And it helps get down into the soil. It opens it up. It also helps with the microorganisms that are in the soil that are living and actually doing the work of the soil, turning it, bring the nutrients back to it, fixing the nitrogen. Mycorrhiza fungi, which Sasha had mentioned earlier, is amazing. There's a ton of work being done with that and encouraging that fungus in the soil. But on a very simple level, it is making our soils healthy again. It's getting us those horizons that we need to actually do the work for our plants and for our bodies.
Okay. I don't know how many of us in here are, you know, tilling bazillions of acres, but in terms of, you know, we go home to our little plots of land, what's our job?
I think for your own land is just like using compost and then, you know, recycling all your waste in a good way, as far as I know. And I want to kind of add another note on your first question with, like, some policy that, like, Department of Conservation or some first states could do is just on the topic of illegal dumping of, like, hazardous waste. It's a big issue.
Also stop using fertilizers, please. We don't see it as any more than, oh, this is going to help kill the weeds in my front yard, but we have these rain events like we've been having. It washes down into our stormwater, it's running down into our creeks that end up leading into a larger tributary. Fertilizers are huge. Native plants, start planting native plants. These foreign plants that we are bringing in, we have a huge invasive species problem that is killing out all of our native species. So when you go to plant a garden, you know, go to your local gardening store and ask, what are the native plants? Do you guys support this? There's native plant sales that go on all the time around this time of season. So it's again, education and awareness.
I like to advocate against using pesticides because you can make natural pesticides with, like, a combination of vinegar and water and some other things. There's recipes online. And there's also plants you can grow together. There's one combination of three called Three Sisters, which is, like, beans, squash, and corn. Thank you. Yeah, that's a really good set of plants to grow together for providing the nitrogen to fixate properly, and they all support each other really nicely.
You mentioned earlier the tax on hybrids and EVs. When does that go into effect, and do you have an idea how much it's going to be, and what are we going to do to countermand it, and how do we get a carbon tax other than that?
You're talking about this new bill they've passed. I knew that it was being considered, and apparently it's been passed. Well, at any rate, the dollar amounts are not huge, you know, considering the cost of a car. I mean, I think they're going to be like $90 or something like that instead of $30. But it's the idea that's so negative about that, because I was going to ask a question myself, which I will do, about transportation, because I feel guilty all the time about driving my car or getting on an airplane, and I don't want to put a guilt trip on everybody, but we all are still using these forms. So the only way to get around that, it would seem to me, is, as far as automobile transportation, is to go electric, because there's a connection with renewable energy in that case, that you can get at least some of that energy from renewable energy instead of fossil fuels. So what is your attitude about highly efficient automobiles, electric or hybrid cars?
I'm generally in favor of electric, like, vehicles and things like lawnmowers, for example. I do know that for making some of the batteries, they use lithium. lithium ions and things, and when they mine that, it's really like a chemically invasive process for mining it out of areas. So, and then it's also a very limited resource.
I agree with Sasha. I think we're headed in the right direction, but it's not perfect yet. We're doing the best, I don't want to say the best that we can. We're trying, you know, we're trying to make it better. And to speak to your question about the bill that was on the floor, it's things like these that hold us back. You know, you shouldn't, I understand that you're not paying the taxes at the gas pumps anymore, but it almost feels like you're being punished for trying to do the right thing. You know, and that makes me angry. And in there's a huge difference. What they were saying, Kansas was like $90, and I think Missouri is like $30 cheaper. And it's very different all throughout the states, which also kind of seems strange to me.
There's been a story going around recently in the science news about feeding cows seaweed, and it reduces methane by like 95%. But then I also hear stories about whenever a CAFO issue comes up, it seems they get their way with very little regulation. So I'm wondering if there's any talk about, you know, managing livestock in ways that reduce their greenhouse gas emissions in any kind of serious way that could, you know, eventually get us to where we're talking about reducing greenhouse gases instead of building more CAFOs.
Concentrated animal feeding operations.
Concentrated animal feeding operations. Animal factories. The great big hog farms.
And feedlots. Yeah.
Question. I think they're very protected. I used to work for state government that would permit and also inspect these places, and they are extremely protected by the state, especially living Missouri, Kansas that we do. There isn't anything good about confined feeding operations, in my opinion. They're very concentrated. They pollute air, water, soil, and they're not going anywhere anytime soon. I think on a small scale, like the producers that I work with for water quality, cover crops, like I was talking about earlier, to help with soil, they're starting to open graze them on cover crops instead of having to grow the corn and then feed them the corn, unhealthy diets basically, and then we're ingesting that unhealthy meat. And they're trying to do better. We're trying to educate them on that. There are better things that you can do. I've heard of the seaweeds, and I think, I don't know my complete opinion on it just yet. But this is also a place, I hate plugging this in all the time, but this is also a place that we can be smart consumers, right? Instead of buying those large brand names that are in the grocery store, which because this is going to be on the radio, I won't say them, but we all know them. We live in a really great place to go out to local farms, small operations that are doing the right thing, that are environmentally aware of their footprint. You can go out to the farm and get local food. It's grown locally, support local. So this is areas that we can be aware of it and vote with our dollar.
On the topic of seaweed, I heard about a company that developed like an alternative to water bottles where they took some kind of seaweed and they transformed it into making like a little bubble that they could fill it with a liquid, and then you would basically ingest that and it just dissolves in your body. But as far as being sustainable, I don't know how sustainable that would be, taking all the seaweed and you have to regrow it, of course.
I just want to say this. I am 100% for eradicating the cow, and I know that sounds crazy. Yeah,
just go vegetarian.
I know that sounds crazy, but the way that we raise animals in these confined feeding areas, humanity on one side of it is depressing enough, but they have a sad existence, you know, and they're not healthy, and we're not healthy, and it's building up, bioaccumulating in our body, the terrible stuff that we're feeding them and the antibiotics that we're injecting into them.
And growth hormones, too.
Yeah. It's just, so I mean, if the cow went extinct, I wouldn't feel bad.
The recent flooding caused many transportation department workers to refocus their normal job duties. And so instead of helping with cleaning of roadsides and so on, they had to do other things. And sort of this brought to the news and public awareness the problem with plastic bags. And I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about how did we get to the point where we stopped using, for the most part, regular paper bags and got where we're at, where we're just using plastic bags that are showing up all over the place where we don't want them.
Mostly, I think it's just for convenience sake.
And cost.
And what was that?
And cost.
Oh, cost, yeah.
We became a very convenient society. Whatever is most convenient for us without thinking of implications later down the road. And I think that's still very much a mindset right now, out of sight, out of mind. You know, we're going out to riverbanks and we're cleaning them up. We're taking away all the litter, but where does that end up? You know, we need to think of it as a whole and connect it back to it. It's still going somewhere. So it doesn't matter if we're making these, using them, they're still going somewhere and they're not degrading in the environment. You know, they're sticking around for 7, 10 plus years. So this is where being aware of it and reuse, reduce. We're great at recycling, you know, but what's happening to our recycling? Nobody's buying our plastic anymore. So it's just, it's still staying here. So reduce and reuse is the way that we need to get everybody on board.
And if we have less demand of plastic goods, then eventually that consumption rate will go down and that production rate will go down too.
I'd like to ask each of you kind of where you stand on the pessimism versus optimism scale with regard to the environment. You're certainly aware, more aware than most, of the extreme effects of climate change and the ocean dying and the soils being depleted and all the other environmental crises that humans seem to be bringing upon the earth. Do we just have too many people in the world to ever think of solving these problems, or are they soluble the way we're headed now?
I definitely get pessimistic sometimes, but then I remember why I'm doing it, and that gives me some more optimism. And then an issue that's really important to me, too, is the whole status of the coral reefs and that some of them are damaged already. So I think changes need to happen in the tourism industry as far as, like, snorkeling and scuba diving things go, because the boats and the motor oil they use is a factor.
I feel like it's important to have an equal balance of the two of those. You've got to have optimism and having hope that there is a chance for success in saving our environment, but you also have to be pessimistic, because you have to be, I don't want to use the word forceful, but you have to be very adamant about what you're talking about and be just very passionate about it. And so I think you've got to have an equal balance of both of those things in order to get somewhere.
I am somewhat of a stickler on definitions, and I'm going to throw out three terms in which I will give you my impression. I'd like your response. A lot of people think that we control nature. We never control nature. If we could control nature, we would not have the problems we have. The second one is that we harness nature. The only thing about nature we can harness is something that's renewable, such as the wind and the sun. The final term is exploit nature. This is where man has the superiority over other animals. We are taking non-renewable things out of the earth, and we're using them, and those are the things that are causing all of our environmental problems. Other living species are in harmony with their surroundings. We, as part of nature, are basically part of the problem because we can't even control ourselves. Thank you.
I agree. I didn't know if there was a question there, but definitely agree.
There wasn't a question. I asked you to comment on what I was saying.
I think it's right.
I do agree with what you're saying, but I also think that humans do try to control nature.
To control it means that you're picking out a particular part of nature without taking into consideration how the rest of nature is affected by what we do. So we do not control nature. We basically exploit nature.
We control certain aspects of nature, but we can't control it fully.
Several times you've mentioned the lack of education being a big problem. And I'm wondering on just some practical levels, like our way overuse of plastic bags in particular, and the fact that we don't know, I think most of us, where to go to the local farmers. There are places you can go. But just for the everyday shopper that turns up at Hy-Vee or Price Chopper or wherever, could there be some kind, I don't know whether it's a flyer, some kind of information that tells people, do you know what's happening to the earth with plastic bags? Or here is a big place where you can recycle your plastic bags. I think that there are some just very basic education that could be done with reaching people on where to shop and what to bring. You know, take your canvas bag. But what can be done to get that information out on an everyday, simple, practical level?
Definitely think it's kind of a tough issue to tackle with, spreading the awareness and education. I know one company, for example, Hen House, and it's owned by Ball's Foods. They have like a plastic bag recycling bin in their store right in the front, right as you walk in. A good place to go is farmers markets, because there's nothing really in plastic there. They don't provide bags, I believe, for you to buy your goods in, your veggies. They do? Oh, wow.
I think one thing is starting the education young. You know, we're raising our children to live in this environment that we're destroying, so they need to know what's going on. And personally, for me, I didn't really realize the extremity of all of this until I was in college. And that kind of is mind-blowing to me that it's not something that's talked about more.
Going to a lot of the farmers markets, too, these local producers will sign up with the local grocery stores, and you pay a certain amount every month, and then they provide you with a bag of, you know, whatever's in season at that time. That's also a really great place to start, to know the local producers, get to know them. I think it needs to be a drastic visual image. So what I think of in my head when we say what can be done, how can we educate people, it's like the cigarette companies put, I don't think they do this in the United States, but in other countries, they'll put horrifying pictures on the cigarette pack and make you look, you know, it makes you aware, they make you look at it. I think things like that need to be put out. Social media is a huge thing right now. Put it out on social media, educate people. I think you need to grab their attention. And it's not enough just to say, well, you probably shouldn't use a plastic bag. Try to bring your own. But if you forget it at home, it's fine. We still have plastic bags here. It needs to be more of a in-your-face, drastic movement.
And that, too, starts with the staff that work at the store.
But who's going to do it?
That's the hard thing. I have an idea in my mind of, like, putting people in stores just to advocate for this, but that's also pretty difficult to do because that's a lot of time for someone to spend, of course.
And we see that it's not happening at a state level, so then it goes down to a city level, goes down to a community level. Make a difference in your community. Push your city to do the things, you know, that you believe are right. It starts on a small scale because the state's not going to... I hate to... That's a doom and gloom again. I don't mean to sound doom and gloom, but they're not going to do anything. So you need to start at a smaller level.
My question is around engagement of younger people. I heard you guys talk about education and awareness, and I have two teenage daughters who are far more educated and aware than I am, but they're not engaged. So any words of wisdom around how to get younger folks engaged?
I think a big one that helped for me to connect me to nature is that my grandparents would take us out to the lake and we would go hiking in different areas. Living in Montana for a little bit, they definitely encouraged us to connect with nature and just taking us out and showing us what there is. I think also getting involved in community things, like Earth Day is coming up. There's always community activities for Earth Day. Visiting booths and talking to them about what you can do on a small scale level, but somehow finding a way to connect them back to nature. You know, you serve a plate of food and you say, do you know where that came from? Do you know the footprint that went through to get here? You know, small things like that to engage them, make them connected to it.
I think summer camps are also a good way to do that. For like with Shawnee Mission Park and Johnson County Parks and Rec, for example. Like I worked with Ernie Miller Nature Center last summer as a camp counselor there. And also there's one that I'm friends with the director that we just started a nonprofit at. It's called Blue River Forest Experience. That's in Stillwell, Kansas, which is, it's still really small, but it's probably going to get big, hopefully. So. And then during those summer camps, we encourage a lot of like, you know, picking up trash. And we teach you about the significance of organisms in nature, you know, plants, animals, how to track, things like that.
I'm thinking of these things all at different levels. You know, there's the level of my home where I argue with my husband about I'm a fanatic. And then there's the level of the church where people think I'm a fanatic. And then there's the thing that gives me some faith is the whole drawdown look at I'm going, oh, we're talking about really putting it back in. You know, we're not saying you have to change. I'm not trying to tell my friends, now think all the time about the environment, you know. And somehow the idea of we're looking at the global takes away some of the personal part of it. I think in some ways may work better than pushing the people right next to you who are tired of hearing you all the time. But I'd like to hear how the drawdown fits in with your versus telling the store, don't give me a bag. In fact, you ought to charge for them. You know, those two levels of... Because one makes me sad and depressed, and the other one gives me hope. But I don't know how y'all look at it. So
I look at it as the globe is made up of the people in it. So just getting everyone to work together for sustainability will eventually work, I think.
I just want to...
Last question.
I wonder if you see in Lawrence, are there any organizations where it's just kind of natural, this is how we do it? Like, I mean, like in fraternities or sororities or at the university? You know, like, so we're just going to all eat this way rather than making it a big option? So, or maybe a church where we're just all environmental. Do you see anything like that happening? And kind of a lifestyle sort of a group transformation?
I don't think I've ever seen a complete full transformation in any specific group. For example, I know KU Dining is working on switching towards completely more sustainable ways of using their food containers and making everything compostable. But when they get the goods, it comes in a lot of plastic bags. So they're not complete in that way.
I think more people in the community are aware, which I think is the first step, but I haven't seen... Because it's a melting pot, so many people come there from different areas of the United States. I think the melting pot holds them back, but I definitely think they're more aware. A lot of more public transportation being taken and better choice in food, you know, choosing a local grocery store over Hy-Vee or Dillon's, things like that. I think there's more awareness there.
Okay, thank you very much. That was really great. Actually, I'm encouraged because of your vision and your understanding of the fundamental problem. That's the first step. As somebody I know says, you've got to correctly define the problem. That's George Bagot back there. That's what he always said. And I think you've correctly defined the problem, and that's the first step in a long-term solution. So I'm encouraged. And for your honorarium, you get your very own forum coffee cup, which is union made in the United States. And if you'd like to discuss this further, and I have some more questions of my own, then we're going to go to the library afterwards. And next week, we have another really interesting forum. That's Medicare for All, Problems and Solutions. And it'll be three people. It'll be another panel, which I think is really something we probably should do more of at the forum. Members of the Kansas City Chapter of Physicians for National Health Plan and others will discuss the problem solutions for Medicare for All, and this is a very topical issue. So thanks a lot for coming to the forum, and if you'd like, we'll see you in the church library.
Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's presentation, A New Generation Addresses Our Environmental Crisis, with Megan Rush, Peyton Templeton, and Sasha Bornstein. This program was recorded on Sunday, April 7th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. All Souls Forum is edited and produced for broadcast by Christina Frazier. Our theme song was composed, performed, and recorded by musician Fred Potter. This program will be available for podcast within one day of broadcast on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Remember, you can also find archived All Souls podcasts and many other interesting and enlightening public affairs programs produced by KKFI on the KKFI website. Thanks for joining us this evening, and we hope you tune in next week, same time, same place, when we will continue the conversation here at 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station.